Hello, and welcome to episode 61 of the Planning Period Podcast, your Ed Breakroom. I'm your host, Brad Scheffler. This week on the show, I'm joined by Roland Chidiak for part two of his chat with me. Roland is a classroom teacher in elementary grades and an education podcaster out of Ontario, Canada, and he is passionate about integrating technology into his classroom. If you haven't done so yet, make sure you go back and listen to part one of this conversation first, which is episode 60 of the podcast. On this episode, Roland and I talk about funding, the dreaded them and how they affect teachers, why teachers spend their own money on supplies, the importance of doing things differently to spice things up, and how people handle change, especially technological change. So sit back and enjoy episode 61 of the Planning Period Podcast, part two of my interview with Roland Chidiak. Well, Roland, we've been going for 45 minutes almost, and we literally haven't gotten to any of my three questions, and I know you have to leave shortly, so we may have to schedule part two, but I at least want to get to my first question before we run out of time here today. And my first question is always for my guests, what is the biggest problem facing education today?
Oh, wow, that's loaded, man. As soon as you told me that you had three questions, I was like, let's do this. We'll get through all three before I have to go. And then you hit me over the head with that one. The biggest problem in education? Okay, I'm going to go with the low-hanging fruit, and I'm going to say it's all about the money. I'm going to say there's not enough funding for us. So increasingly, they want us to do more with less time, right? They want us to figure out how to do more. They want us to enter our students into the 21st, into the 22nd century. They want us to help build a society that can take care of itself when we are not responsible for taking care of these people anymore. But they rarely give us what we need to truly make it happen. They just don't. Right. So they want us to use, digital tools and things of that nature because that's where the world is moving. But then they tell you, well, we don't have money to buy you this, this, and this. So we're giving you this, do what you can with it. And then there's people who will go out and get what they need to do what they want. And that's cool. So I'm just going to leave it at funding. Funding, funding, funding. Yeah. You give us the money, we can buy the things that we think we can do what you want us to do, and we can move from there.
Whenever people talk about funding, the obvious response is why? Why don't we have funding? We recognize the importance of education. Why don't we have it? But we know that politics and everything else play into it. But I want to turn this, because this is the other thing I always think about. No matter how many times they cut funding or take money away or whatever else, educators always seem to make it happen. I mean, we've all seen the studies about how much money educators spend on supplies for their students and all those things. And so we make it happen. And I'm wondering if I often feel like that educators by nature have a little bit of that martyr syndrome in them, that we just accept we're not going to get what we need, but we are going to make this work. And I'm curious, because I think that's what one of the problems is as we continue to just make it work, they feel like they can continue to cut funding. And so I'm wondering where you connect in with that comment.
I agree with you 100%. And here's how I connect to what you just said. So, like, you know, I'm a tech guy. I enjoy the tech. I enjoy the gadgets, and I enjoy thinking, how can I connect this to the curriculum, and how can I connect this to my students' learning and give them what they need so I feel good when they leave me? So I'm willing to put my money where my mouth is to buy some of that stuff. And I do it begrudgingly, but I do it for two reasons. Reason number one is because it's part of what I like to do. It's part of who I am. So I'm bringing me to the classroom, and I feel that if I didn't do that, I would feel hindered. I would feel like I'm not honoring me. And if I can't honor me, then how am I going to honor them? That's the first thing. The second thing is, dude, 100% I agree. People will walk into my room and say, oh, you have this, this, and this. Well, I guess I'm going to go spend the money down the hall. And that pisses me off because I got this, this, and this because I need it to do what I want to do. But then they're like, well, you already have it. I'm like, yeah, I have it, but that's who I am. It's like when you go, if they come to my room looking to spend money on art supplies, I'm going to get all the money because the teachers down the hall who love art and who feel it's who they are, they're going to bring that to their classroom community. And they're probably going to be upset that admin's spending the money on me for all these supplies and not on them. I guess it's the way the world works. I don't know how else to like deal with that, but I can tell you that. And the martyr, the word martyr killed me when you said that, because I don't see myself as a martyr, but I do see myself as, okay, if my kids are going to learn to code using a Sphero, then I'm going to go buy a Sphero. Now, mind you, I only have one. I have BB-8, and the kids have had to use BB-8 and share BB-8 all year, but at least I have one. You know, at least they've been exposed. And the kids who have been exposed and who loved it went with it hardcore. And so, you know, if I had 30 of them in the room, then they might all not all be being used, and then that's a problem, right? But I had one Sphero, and they exhausted it. I had a 3D printer, which is a big deal, but they used it, right? They started thinking that way. They started bringing things to life. So there are some teachers that walk around saying, oh, poor me, oh, poor me. I'm not an oh, poor me kind of guy when it comes to that. But, you know, if somebody says, hey, I've got this much money, can I buy you something? I'm going to be like, yeah, here's my list.
Yeah, I was going to say, I definitely have a wish list on Amazon of classroom needs. So every time a grant opportunity pops up, I'm like, well, let's see. This would work with this, this, and this. And then grant opportunities are there. But I don't think that you necessarily as a martyr have to have the Igor mentality of, you know, oh, woe is me. I think you can be a martyr and just kind of accept it and say, okay, but I'm going to make, I think to me, a martyr is someone who's going to make the sacrifice to make it work. I think that's my definition of martyr in this context. And I think that's what we do as educators, is we are making the sacrifices to make it work, because we know, you know, I feel like I heard this somewhere, is we can't just let this group go. You can't just let a generation go. You can't let it fall apart so that people can realize how broken it really is, you know? And I think that's where it's hard as an educator, is because if we felt like we could just let a group go, we probably wouldn't be educators.
That's true. I agree with you. I agree with what you said. We can't just let it go. I hear you. It makes me think of the use of social media in the classroom. Social media is out there, right? It's out there, and jump into digital citizenship for a minute. There are kids that are using this stuff, and they're not thinking. They're not being explicitly taught how to behave in a digital world. They just think it's a free for all. And it's not a free-for-all. It can be, but that's not responsible. And so when you said that, I thought, oh my God, you're so right. Like, I feel like I'm doing my part in that area. How do you operate in a digital world? You know, you can't just go off and do what you want. That's not responsible. You're not being a good person when you do that. So let's, you know, take a look at this, and how do we deal with this? And I hope that's one piece of the puzzle that I'm giving to my students, so that when they go on to the next grade, or when they go on in life, because it's funny, Twitter like is happening right now, but in 20 years from now, I'm sure it'll be long gone, and something new will be out there, and it'll be, you know, you'll put your glasses on, you'll be able to connect with people instantly, or however it works at that time in society. But I'm feeling like you're right. We need to give them, we need to ground them, and we need to help them build a foundation, because they're going to build on top of that foundation when we're long gone. So we can't just let them go.
I like it. I agree with it. I'm going to hope we have time for one more before you have to leave us, at least. And my second question for all my guests is, what is something you're doing that you wish all educators would do?
Oh, wow. Something I'm doing that
I don't ask small questions here on the Planning Period Podcast, Roland. I ask big ones.
Well, what I don't like about this question is that it's so big, and it makes me feel like what I'm doing is so much more important than what other people are doing. And I don't like that feeling, but I'm going to put that aside. And I'm going to say that in this moment that you're asking me this question, I would say that it's the ability or the need to do things differently to spice things up. How can other people, and so how am I doing that? Well, you know, for example, I have a podcast. My students this year, they wanted to be YouTubers, so we used my school board account, my YouTube account, to create their videos and share with the world. And people say, well, who cares? Like, why are you doing that? Well, it's new. It's different. They want to do it. It's engaging. It keeps them fresh. It keeps me fresh. So I'm like, you got to find what keeps you fresh. You got to find what you're passionate about and then bring it into your work somehow. You know, there are people out there who I think they just go in, they just do what they need to do to get the day done, and they don't feel so hot at the end of the day. And I think it's because they're holding back. There's something that they're not letting in. So I just feel like right now I'm open to a lot of the new things coming this way, and I feel blessed that it's wrapped around like the digital world. Because that's always kind of been a place where I felt comfortable. So I'm just lucky that I fell into my interests fall in line with the things that are happening that seem to be like moving our world along. That's all. I mean, I'm in the right time at the right place with the right interests. So I just think that I like to bring my passion and interest outside of work into work. And I like to leave room for people who don't agree with that, because there are always kids that don't buy in, and that's fine. Tell me what you're about, and I'm open enough, I think, that I will do what I need to do to get you to buy into what you need to move on. So, geez, I answer this question, I feel like my answer is just like a level 1D answer, but that's what I got for you.
You know, it's interesting because you talked about technology and then you talked about right time and place. And I don't know offhand how old you are, but for me, I feel like I was born in the right time to be technology literate. And I think what that means to me is somebody said the other day that while I was at ISTE, somebody made the comment that the students we're dealing with now, especially if you're in like elementary and middle school at this point, the first technology they ever dealt with was a smartphone, which when I touched my first piece of technology would have been a pipe dream, would have been like, wouldn't it be amazing if, you know, it was like Star Trek technology compared to what we had back then. I mean, I grew up and I watched the advent of dial-up modems, and I remember getting kicked off the internet when somebody picked up the phone in the house. And I remember the taking 20 minutes to load one image. And I remember when the internet got faster and having my first, you know, accessing my first laptop because my mom had a business laptop that I could use. And I got to play with that. And I remember thinking like, wow, this is portable now, but it was like 20 pounds and you couldn't walk, like you could only use it in the backseat of a car and it lasted 5 minutes. And like, I remember all the evolutions. I remember it building. I remember Napster and LimeWire. And I remember all the iterative technologies that got us to where we are right now. And in a lot of ways, I don't feel like that same amount of innovation and iteration is happening anymore. I feel like that pace has slowed somewhat. And so I feel like I'm in that vote. But then there's people that are older than me who were already adults when all this stuff started. So their minds were in a more fixed state. I mean, we know that kids adapt to things quicker than adults do. You know, our brains are become more rigid as we age. And so there were adults who were not comfortable starting where I started. They were not ready for that. And then there's kids who are starting at the now. And I feel like I grew up in like the perfect time space to be able to change and iterate, because I watched all this change happen so quickly and I just forced myself to keep up with it. And I worry about both sides and getting us to sort of meet in this ideal middle so that we can be comfortable with that amount of change, so that we can be comfortable with iteration and improvement. And I feel like every time a new iPhone comes out, I'm shown how uncomfortable you are with change, because everybody loses their mind because, oh my God, there's no home button now, or this got moved here. And it's like the worst thing to ever happen. And I'm going, yeah, but I remember the Android G1 had a slide out keyboard, and then they got rid of that. And then they got rid of that. And then they, you know, I mean, like I don't know. I worry about the sides that are not as comfortable with that change and how we get them to be comfortable with that.
Yeah, I think eventually they'll have to deal with it, because as time goes on, like for example, up until maybe a year and a half ago, my cable provider, my television cable provider, finally went full digital, and they've been trying to do this for like 10 years, and they continue to warn their customers, okay, this is not going digital, this is not going digital. Analog here is dead in terms of like cable television with this particular company. So anybody who remained with the company had to just, you know, I know like people, the cable company walked in and said, okay, here's your new box, because that box doesn't work anymore. And they're like, what do you mean? They're like, we've been telling you for 10 years, it's going away. It's finally gone. And so long story short, I think if people are going to live here, it just eventually it's going to happen. And I know people who wait for that. They're like, I'm not changing until I can't not have an option. And I'm like, that's fair enough. There are some things that I look for the cracks and try to enter in. There are other things I don't. I just wait. But that's a good point. And I don't know how old you are. I'm 41. So I was learning about the internet. I remember the first time I heard about the internet, I was on a school bus. I was sitting at the back of the bus, and I was waiting. I went to high school in the country, so we had like 50 buses that would come pick everybody up and take them home. And I was on my bus, and my buddy got on, and his dad is a doctor. And so his dad was always cutting edge. And I said, what are you going to be doing tonight? He goes, I'm going to get on the internet. And at the time, he called the World Wide Web. I'm going to get on the World Wide Web. And I'm like, what is this? What is this beast that you speak of? And he's like, I'm going to get on my computer. I'm going to be able to like see things that like live like in other countries. And I'm like, what? You know, I remember hearing that in grade 12 and being like, this is madness. And then I remember when I went to university, my sister paid for AOL. And so when she bought a desktop, she got AOL, and that's how we connected to the internet. A lot of people won't even know what I'm talking about, but AOL with the dial-up or whatever, like you were talking about.
The dial-up, and you got 700
there
free
you go.
Minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I would go to – I was in first-year university, so fast forward 2 years later. First-year university, I'm in the computer lab, and I'm exposed to email. And it's – my interface was not a graphical user interface. It was just all text. And I was so excited that I had email. And then one day – a month into my university career, I saw my buddy from high school, and we were chatting, and I said, where are you going? He goes, I'm going to the lab, check my email and to surf the net. And I was like, what do you mean surf the net? It's all text. He's like, oh no, Roland, come with me. So we went to the lab, we sat down, and he introduced me to graphical user interface, to Internet Explorer. And I remember sitting there in front of the computer, and he was right beside me, and I logged in, and I hit this thing, this app, and it opened, and I literally, my mouth dropped, and it was like heaven opened up to me. It was I'm talking about it like it was yesterday. Like I can feel everything I was feeling that day. And I remember thinking, this is me. I love this. Right. And let's put aside all of like the internet addiction and all that stuff, but just the fact that the world was open to me was unbelievably amazing. Unbelievably amazing. And you're right. Like my kids, they don't understand what that means. They grew up like, you know, they flip out if they can't find the iPad to watch Netflix. So like, what am I going to do now? And I'm like, go pick up one of those books and start reading, or go to your Lego and build something. Are you kidding me? So, I know that I've stepped over my time, but I just got an extension. I texted my wife and I explained what's happening here, so she's all good. So I have a little bit of time if we can get to the third question.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's keep rolling. I'm good with it. We've got my show can be as long as I want it to be, so it's fine with me.
Oh, cool.
So it is weird. I'm a little younger, so I'm 32. So I was a little behind you in this whole process. And so, I was in elementary school. I had to have been in elementary school the first time I used the internet. I can still like distinctly remember that dial up sound and like, wow. And going to like Nickelodeon.com. And that was when you had to use keywords. Do you remember like AOL keywords? Because I would watch TV and they'd be like, use keyword Nick. And I was like, oh, I want to go use keyword Nick. I want to know what happens. And then it's like just this awful, like, orange and green page, which in retrospect was terribly designed and 90% text, and in the modern day internet would just be ignored completely as a spam site. Like, it's just, it's a, but I can remember that evolution. I can remember all of that. And I think that that leads itself to, you know, we talk about neuroplasticity as like the technical term for accepting change and being able to build new connections. And so, I don't know. I feel like there's a, for me at least, there's a definite connection of watching that iterative to having that plasticity and being able to change my mindset on things. So I don't know. I just don't know how to directly model that in an age where the improvement in technology is so on the back end. You know, if you follow technology and you're involved, yes, we're making major strides in processing power and computational power and, you know, battery life. And there's amazing strides happening on the back end. But on the front end consumer side, it doesn't feel that way, right? Like, oh, look, my iPad's prettier than my old one is what it kind of feels like. And so I worry that we're to a point where we're not seeing the amount of change, and it's not translating for people being accepting of that.
Yeah, you've definitely got me thinking. I'm still stuck on these questions. These questions, these open-ended questions you ask. It reminds me of my university exams, where you walk in and the prof is like, I'm going to give you three questions and you're going to sit here for the whole 3 hours because you want to tell me everything you know.
I spent a lot of time figuring out the right questions to ask all my guests to still have a structure, but a free-formed podcast. That was always my goal.
I like it. It's working.
All right, cool. Well, I've only got one left, so that works out. We got one more. Are you ready? This one's the easiest one, I think.
Okay.
All right. So my last question for all my guests is, who is the best teacher you've ever had?
The best teacher I ever had. Okay. Well, the good news is as soon as you said that, my brain went right to one. So it's not like I had to sit and think about it. There is one teacher, but there were a few people that were in that teacher circle that really impacted me. So Mr. McDonald was my, I guess you could say my grade 12 and grade 13. So when I went through, high school, we had a grade 13 in Ontario. It was called OAC, Ontario Academic Credits. And to get into university, you had to take at least 6 OAC courses. So that's how I went through the system. So in grade 12, I took advanced science courses like physics and chemistry, and he was my teacher. And then in grade 13, I took grade university entry level courses, and he was my teacher. And so I spent a lot of time in the sciences because that's where I thought I was going to go if I got into university. So Mr. McDonald was my grade 13 physics and chemistry teacher. And I remember, so without giving you too much information, I was never a good student. Like, I never did well academically. You know, C's and some B's. And then I woke up one morning in grade 12 and I was like, oh my God, like, what am I going to do with my life? Like, is this just going to end after grade 13? I won't get into university. I won't want to go to college because there's nothing interesting. So I'll just, this is it. And so I was like, this is not it. So I woke up and I was like, I got to do better. So I started working my tail off. Fast forward to like end of grade 12, beginning grade 13. I was sitting in Mr. McDonald's class at lunch because he was one of those cool teachers where he was eating lunch in his room and the doors open. So if you want to come in and chill with your friends and chat them up, go for it. And I felt really comfortable around him. So I remember sitting there. And I remember eating my lunch and talking to my buddies. And I just said to him, I'm like, Mr. McDonald, like, what am I going to do? None of this works for me. Like, you guys give homework. I go home. I do the homework. I just don't understand the concepts. I just don't do well in school. And he said to me, and I'll never forget this. He said, don't worry, Roland. The way you learn and the way you operate fits exactly with how university operates. So at that point in time, I wanted to study psych or political science. And so they were the arts. And he said, in the arts, you know, you go to a 3-hour lecture and then you have all week to do your reading. You have all week to do your assignments. It's not like you get a 3-hour lecture and be back the next day and everything has to be done. Because that's what high school was for me. High school was every night I had like all this work and I had to get it all done in like 4 hours and wake up the next morning, go in and get more of it. And that's just not the way I operate. So, or at least that's not how I operated when I was a kid. And he just said, relax, man, you're going to do fine. The way you work, the way you study, your study skills, and the way you learn, you're built for the way that university operates. And I just remember thinking, okay, well, I'm going to take what you're putting down because I trust you and you're a good guy. But do I really buy it? And so then I get into university and I start to find success. Like and when I left grade 13, I left with like, you know, high B's. So B pluses and B's. So I got into university, no problem. And that felt good. And then I went to university and I would come back and visit every year. Every year I'd come back to my high school and I'd visit. And the first place I'd go was Mr. McDonald. And I'd be like, hey, what's going on? It was really cool because he'd be like, do you have anything you want to say to my students? And it was kind of cool because here I am, you know, the kid that they all know who I was because I used to go to school with them, but now I'm in university. And so I would drop my wisdom on them and then I'd chat him up and I'd leave. And that continued even to teacher's college. So I went to teacher's college. I became a teacher. And then I remember getting my first call to supply teach. And all my supply teaching was done at my old high school. I remember the first time I went back as a teacher. And I went to the office and I reported in. And it was funny because half the staff remembers me being a real jerk. And the other half remembers me stepping up and like doing something with my life. So it was always like a minefield being back at my old high school. Some of those teachers really, I felt like they disliked me. And so I'd get my assignment and I'd go up to Mr. McDonald. And at this point, he's like, call me Dave. And I'm like, I can't. And he's like, why not? And I'm like, you're Mr. McDonald. You're always going to be Mr. McDonald. So, you know, he's like, well, whatever, call me what you want. Here's the key to my office if you need a place to chill so that they don't nail you for on calls. And, you know, he's like, you're a teacher now. You're one of us. And it was so cool because I went from this like delinquent student to someone who was able to get 2 university degrees at the time and, you know, be recognized by these people as a colleague. And that was a big deal to me. So, you know, every time I supply taught, there, I would always go and visit him. And then, you know, it kind of fitting. The last time I was there, he was telling me that he was considering retirement. And then the next year he retired and I was gone. I had moved cities and gotten a job as a teacher. And to this day, whenever I run into, or, you know, on the internet, it's easy to talk to my friends who are teachers at that high school, but I always ask about him. I always say, you know, have you heard from Mr. McDonald? Is he doing well, you know? And they tell me that they have. They've run into him out in the country where he lives and stuff. But it's like the words that that man gave me were the words that I needed at that time when nobody else really believed in me. So your easiest question turned out to be the hardest one for me to deal with emotionally because there's so many connections and there's so many emotions that go with those connections. So thanks for letting me relive that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, in doing the show and asking that question, it's amazing that I have yet to, I don't believe, and I think this is episode 55, 56, something like that, no one has ever said like this teacher because they taught me so much about subject area. You know, it's never that moment of like, oh man, I wouldn't be half the biologist I am today without this person. It's always, I wouldn't be the person I am today without this person. Mm-hmm. And as we talked, you know, for an hour and some change today, I wouldn't say we focused on content, but when we talk about change, we talk about the change affecting our classroom and the change affecting the way we teach and all those things. And yet, in a lot of ways, those are probably the least important things we do in a classroom. You know, and it's, you know, adding a laptop into the classroom, adding technology in the classroom, or taking away technology from a classroom shouldn't change the way we connect with our students. It shouldn't change the way we treat students like people, and that we learn who they are and nurture who they are, or allow them to figure out who they are, whatever that case may be. And I think those are the things we need to hold on to as we're struggling through change. Those are the things we need to remember, is that at the end of the day, yes, content is important. I'm not saying we don't need to teach content, but it is never the content that is what makes a great teacher.
Mm-hmm. I agree 100%. It's those connections, right? Those relationships, I feel like part of my job is teaching kids how to be human. You know, this is how you operate in this world. And I'm no expert, but, you know, someone believes that I have enough in me, that I'm qualified enough to stand in front of you and to try to lead you down a path where you're going to make good decisions, where you're going to struggle, and this is maybe how you might deal with the struggle, and this is how you relate to each other. And sometimes I'm a great example of that, and sometimes I'm a really bad example of that. But you're right, because, you know, some of my kids, it's funny, because when people say when you grow up, you'll forget the lessons you were taught, but you'll remember the person who taught you. And I like to disagree a little bit with that, because, you know, my class 3 years ago that got to use a 3D printer, they had only ever seen a picture of it, and then they actually got to use one. So they may remember that. They may remember, like, oh my God, I remember grade 4 because Mr. C had a 3D printer and we got to bring our learning to life. So those lessons they might remember because they're so, like, big time. But yeah, like all the fraction talks we did this year and all the number talks we did in numeracy, I don't know how many of the kids are going to walk away and in 10 years are going to be like, hey, remember that one number talk he did? I'll never forget that. If they remember it, it'll be because something happened during that 10-minute talk that glued into their brain forever, right? It won't
necessarily be they remember that you gave them that talk. Like, that's the thing about it. It's like true learning of content, right? It shouldn't be tied to a memory that specific, because we want them to be able to apply it in other ways. And so if they remember specifically that, oh, I remember Mr. C taught me that the denominator has to match if we're going to combine, like, I don't know, whatever. I don't math. I don't numeracy that well for that matter. But, like, you know, the denominator has to match in this case. We don't necessarily want them to tie that to you, because then that's constraining the learning. Like, we want them to just sort of have it as part of an accessible part of their brain. So it shouldn't, it's almost like that would be the bad thing, is if they were tying it to a specific experience. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. It totally makes sense.
And yet that's not, like, those aren't the things that, I don't know, to me, those just aren't the things that matter about school. When I think back on my school experience, like, sure, I learned things. I had to have, because I know things. Like, I guess at some point I had to have learned things. But I can't necessarily tie, like, oh yeah, in ninth grade, I learned this, that, and the other in this particular teacher's class. I can't tie that connection necessarily. But I know I did. But I can definitely tell you a ninth grade teacher that had a major impact on me for the rest of my life.
Man, you really got me thinking this morning. I wasn't prepared for this. I wasn't prepared
when you booked a 9 a.m. slot, I was like, I'm going to have to get up early and get some coffee in me so my brain's running.
Yeah. I'm glad I did it though. I'm told, and yeah, I was absolutely. Like, yeah, let's get this done early in the morning, because you should see my list of to-dos. It's ridiculous. All the things that need to get done. We're going on vacation next week. We're going to the beach. And so there are things that need to happen in order for that to occur. But yeah, it's been a real pleasure. Thanks for reaching out to me and having me. come on your podcast. It's really cool to chat with you. It's really cool for, like, selfishly for me to talk about the things that are floating in my head. And I really appreciate that. And, holy cow. Now that I look back, I did a lot of talking. So
that's
hopefully
the goal
I'm talked
of my show,
up for
man.
A bit.
I watch the waveforms to make sure I'm not doing the majority of it. And I definitely didn't today. So I appreciate that. No, but seriously, thank you so much for being on the show. I really do appreciate it, Roland. You may actually be only the second guest of all time to get a 2-part episode. I think
really?
That of my show, I'm a year and some change in, and you might be the second guest because I don't normally do an hour and a half long episode. So I may split it up and do 2 parts. You want to take a guess who the only other person was to get a 2-part episode?
Stephen Hurley?
No, Chris Clough, of course, which also seems oddly appropriate since you guys are like best friends in real life, it seems like.
Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah.
The stars are aligned.
It seems so appropriate. I think no. It's hilarious. So, Roland, how can people find you if they have questions, comments, want to know more, listen more to your stuff?
The easiest way is to find me on Twitter at rchids. And from there, you can jump into, like, you know, my world. So I can also give you, if you give me a second here, I can also give you like my launching pad on the internet, which is pretty cool. I have, I don't even know what to call it. It's not a web page. I don't know why I can't call it a web page. But if you go to bit.ly/RC and then the word launch, it'll take you to what I call like my digital headquarters on the internet. And you can go from there. It's got a menu of different places where I exist. So you can read my my classroom blog. You can read my leadership blog. You can see some videos of some things that I've done. So Twitter is like where I kind of hang out. But if you're not into Twitter or you want to dig a little bit deeper without having to talk to me, that's cool too. You can check out my digital headquarters. Like I said, it's bit.ly/RC and then the word launch, and it'll take you to the page.
Cool. And links to that, of course, will be in the show notes as well if you don't want to try to remember that. And Roland, seriously, thank you so much for talking to me. I really appreciate it. It's been an awesome conversation. And to my audience also, do not forget to check out the Decoded podcast with Roland and Chris Clough, because it's so much fun to just listen to two guys who are clearly friends, just chat and have a good time and reflect on their experience and what it's like to be a teacher and a parent and just all the different levels you guys add and roll in. So I think it's just it's a great show that's just super fun and relaxed and will really get you thinking. So if you enjoyed this at all, then check out an even better version of Roland on his podcast, Decoded Podcast, which links to that are in the show notes as well. And Roland, thanks again. I really appreciate it, man.
Thank you. I appreciate you sharing out the Decoded stuff. I think that's great. Thanks. And thanks for listening. I think you're maybe the third or fourth listener. So we appreciate that.
Absolutely. All right, man. Have a good day.
You too. See ya.
Roland, thank you again for joining me on this extra long 2-part episode of the podcast. It was really awesome chatting with you. To connect with Roland, find him on Twitter. He's at rchids. Also, be sure to check out his podcast with Chris Clough, the Decoded podcast, on iTunes and YouTube. And you can also check out his digital landing page at bit.ly/rclaunch. Links to all of those are in the show notes. If you have questions or comments about the show, you can always connect with me on Twitter or Instagram. I'm at Brad Schreffler. I love to hear from you guys there, and that's also a great place to connect if you'd like to be a guest on the show. Or you can check out the feedback page on my website, which gives you more options for feedback as well, which you can find at bradschreffler.com/feedback. Until next week, don't let them get you down. Music for the Planning Period podcast is the song Vicious by Kevin MacLeod, used under Creative Commons. You can find him at incompetech.com. The Planning Period Podcast is also a proud member of the VoiceEd Radio Network, a 24-hour radio network all about education all the time. VoiceEd Radio, your voice is right here.